Welcome to Break Bias. I'm your host, Brad Kramer. It's the 89th episode, and I'm here after the Saudi Arabian Grand Prix. The results at the front, all too familiar, but there were quite a few other storylines surrounding round two of the 2024 F1 Championship. But before we get to today's episode, first, a quick reminder to check out the link tree in the description. It has links to all the platforms where you can find this podcast and the ways you can contact me. But now let's get into all the action around Jeddah on and off the track. Well, the race, not the most exciting. It was another dominant victory for Red Bull, a 1-2 finish. It never really felt in doubt, especially for Max Verstappen, our reigning champion, who is just absolutely dominating the sport and decimating the competition. But even for Checo, who performed well this weekend, it always felt like he was going to be right there on race day. Even in qualifying, he was pretty solid. And I really did have high hopes on this track that the competition will be closer to Red Bull, especially Ferrari, who let me down a little bit, but I'll get to them later, as I will also get into the other competitors who may have just showed themselves to be a bit fraudulent this weekend. But again, we'll get to that soon. I'd even go as far as to say that Red Bull and Max Verstappen look set to control all the races for the rest of the season. Maybe until a track comes up that throws a different challenge at them, or maybe the competitors bring a transformative upgrade, but I am afraid to say that we might be in for another season of Max Verstappen just winning every single race and the Dutch anthem being one of the songs of the year. Hats off, though, to the Milton Keynes team, of course. You have to respect what they're doing because, you know, their rivals have improved. Ferrari have made a big step. Mercedes have overhauled their car and are still quicker than they are last year, despite their issues. McLaren are better than they were even at their best last season. Aston Martin has made a step, but Red Bull has just moved the goalpost another 5/10 ahead. And they're too far up the road at the moment. The hope is that that does close up by the end of the year. And then maybe, just maybe, in 2025, it's a little bit different, but it very well could be like this until the end of this rule set, and 2026 gives us a brand new reset. That is a real possibility, unfortunately. But I also want to applaud Checo because, you know, getting third in quali after Leclerc, who we all know is one of the quickest over one lap in a Ferrari that is performing decently well. And then Checo comprehensively beat Leclerc in the race, was pretty close to Max. I would say that's pretty much the perfect performance from Checo. That's exactly what Red Bull is hoping for him to do. He's done it pretty much in the past two races. I still think Bahrain was a little bit suspect, but this performance was great at a track he usually does well at. So great job to Checo. A very solid couple of races to start the season from him. I think I'm going to move on from Red Bull, though. There's not really much to say. I honestly think a lot of people forgot they were even in the race after the first few laps. It was just such a foregone conclusion, and they just controlled it from there. So not much to say about Red Bull on track. I'll get to them later when we get into some off-track stuff, though. Ferrari, easily the story of the weekend, is, of course, Carlos Sainz. He misses media day, roughs it through Thursday practice, but then the word is out that he has appendicitis. He has to get surgery. So the Italian team calls up Ollie Bearman, the F2 driver who was on pole position for his F2 race. Appendicitis, just giving people careers. You know, the same thing happened with Nyck de Vries, with Alex Albon getting appendicitis. He gets his one race, does well, gets a seat out of it. I mean, that could well be the case here with Ollie Bearman, although slightly different because Ollie is a very highly touted prospect. But a quick update on Sainz before I get into all the Ollie Bearman stuff. He's doing well. He actually watched the race from the garage. And after his surgery as well, that was obviously successful, he posted on Instagram, signs to appendicitis zero. And he, of course, recreated the photo of his father and his grandpa when his, you know, his father had the surgery himself. So it was a really cool Instagram post there. Yeah, so he watched the race from the garage. He looks set to race in Melbourne. I would expect him back in a couple weeks' time. But yeah, if you're not an F2 watcher, you may not have known who Ollie Bearman is. Last year was his first year in F2. He showed a lot of promise. I still think one of the moments of the year in F2. And I'm not the biggest F2 guy. I kind of watch it from afar. I'm not following it massively, but I still think one of the moments had to be when Ollie Bearman put it on pole in Azerbaijan with a broken steering wheel, or a bent steering wheel, I guess I should say. It was a super impressive performance. Ollie wasn't the most consistent driver last year, but he showed plenty of performance. He was in FP1s for Haas a couple times as well, and he really impressed Ayo Komatsu more than anyone. So it's interesting to know that Ayo is now the team principal. He, of course, is very pleased with Ollie and thinks a lot of him. Ollie Bearman is going to be in quite a few FP1s this year for Haas. I would fully expect him to be in a Haas seat next year. It was in my predictions at the beginning, and this performance sets him up brilliantly for an opportunity at Haas. But let's talk about this weekend for Ollie Bearman. On practice, I think he looked a little shaky, but they got him out there and he just did as many laps as he possibly could. And it was only one FP3, of course. He didn't get multiple sessions. And then he gets into quali, pretty scrappy. And in a Ferrari, you would say, and Ollie said himself, that the goal should be Q3 for him. If he ends up 9th or 10th, whatever, they'll take that. But Q3 should have been the goal. He fell just short. Less than 0.04 of a second to Hamilton in Q2. So he ended up 11th, which ultimately at a track like Jeddah is still a pretty great job. The field is pretty tight. He's up against the best in the world, and he still put it P11 in a Ferrari that is pretty good in qualifying and I guess overall, but still P11, nothing to be ashamed of. He was a little bit down that he didn't make it into Q3, but I think the world was still pretty impressed with what he was able to do at such a difficult track. And then on race day, that was when he truly shone. I always forget which one it is, but that's where he really showed what he's made of. He had early moments where he was stuck behind slower cars. I think it took him a little bit too long to pass. I think it was Nico Hülkenberg. But at the end of the race, he's on the old hards. He has Lando and Lewis chasing him down because they were on opposite strategies due to the early safety car. And Ollie was doing sensational. I mean, he was not losing that much time at all to those two who were on quicker tires. So P7, great job from Ollie. And a great job from his teammate as well. I think Leclerc was quietly actually pretty great this weekend. In qualifying, he's always there, and he was just shy of the full potential, I think, that Red Bull was able to do. Like, Leclerc was kind of dejected afterwards because I think he knew that he had a perfect qualifying and got the most out of the car, and they still weren't really quite close. So disappointing. The race pace was good, but still pretty far off of the Red Bull. So it's hard to say how well he performed when he doesn't have a proper benchmark. Like, we know Sainz is pretty close to what Carlos can do, what Charles can do. So when there's no real benchmark, it is hard, but it felt like Leclerc really did have a pretty great weekend. He kept it together and maximized basically the opportunity that they had, and that is finishing behind the Red Bull at this moment. Nobody is going to touch those two cars unless Checo has a bad weekend or gets into his inevitable slump or makes a mistake or something. Max is faultless. He's too fast, and the car is sensational. It's just, yeah, Red Bull's firing on all cylinders right now. But you'd have to say Ferrari is definitely the next best team after Red Bull. They have even put some separation, I would argue, between themselves and the fighting pack behind them, being McLaren, Mercedes, and Aston Martin. But Ferrari still does have a ways to go to catch Red Bull. So let's get into the races for the next three, you could say, Mercedes, McLaren, Aston. And this fight was very tight, at least with Fernando Alonso, not so much Lance Stroll. McLaren, despite their horrendous straight line speed, was still probably the best of these three. Then I'd say Mercedes, even though Fernando Alonso finished ahead of both Russell and Hamilton, I would say that Alonso outdrove the car and just had a great weekend, qualified ahead, and that's kind of what earned him the position. I would still put Mercedes ahead of Aston Martin, though. So with that being said, let's start with McLaren then. Let's break down their race. I would say, based off of expectations, it was still a bit of a disappointment. Their DRS is extremely ineffective. They were held back by drag, no pun intended. And yeah, when Perez overtook Norris, it was a 40 kph difference. That is massive. And then when Piastri was trying to overtake Hamilton with a massive, I shouldn't say massive, with a tire offset that was definitely quicker, the high the performance on the straights just wasn't there. It was there on the high speed, although I would argue that McLaren's high speed performance, although of course it is great, carried over from last year, it's actually not as good as you may think, because pretty much any car except for the Haas was better than the Mercedes through the high speed section. So it made the McLaren look really good, because Lando Norris just absolutely darted away from Lewis Hamilton in sector one every single time, and it looked like the McLaren was just brilliant in that section because of how bad the Mercedes was. So really, it was just the shocking performance from Mercedes that flattered the McLaren in the high speed. Really, overall, the McLaren wasn't special anywhere, and they were just really slow on the straights. They were good in all the corners, just good. Not great is basically what I'm saying. And although that is the perfect segue to talk about the Mercs, I got to talk about one thing that happened right at the start, and that is the jump start with Lando Norris. I have zero idea how he did not get a penalty. I'm not saying this because I'm a salty Lewis fan and Lewis was it within 5 seconds of Lando and should have got the one extra place. I don't care about P8 and P9. I just think that was absurd. It was such a clear jump start. Will Buxton, I think, was very vocal about this during the race and after the race, saying the rules basically state that he broke them. It's very black and white. However, F1 stewards argued that their technology didn't agree that he jump started. Although you can clearly see on the camera that his wheels turned, his wheels even went over the white line, and even though it actually resulted in him having a bad start, because Lando, I think, caught himself and tried to hide the fact that he jump started, and then he actually had a super delayed reaction, it doesn't matter. At the end of the day, you jump started, you should get a 5 second penalty or whatever the penalty is. I know in the F1 games it's like a whole drive through penalty. That would be extremely harsh, but you can't jump start, man. And he definitely did. I don't understand how he got away with not getting a penalty there. At the end, if it's a 5 second penalty, then you would say that it was probably just one position that he lost. If it was more, who knows what could have happened. So probably at the end of the day, still one position regardless, just because of how much further ahead they were than the P10 finisher, who was Nico Hülkenberg. But yeah, that was just shocking, and I still don't understand the explanation from the stewards at all. Now, Mercedes. Oh boy. George, P6, Lewis, P9. I guess I didn't quite say where the McLaren's finished, but I'll get to that at the end. I always read out the top 10 results anyway. Going into the weekend, James Allison in Mercedes's little race debrief or whatever thing they do on YouTube was talking about they might have a reliability issue. It didn't really manifest itself at the track, but you could see the Mercedes equipped with some new louvres on the bodywork for some extra cooling. So it seemed like their power unit was fine. However, I wouldn't say their performance was fine. They were experimenting all throughout the three practice sessions, doing different stuff. Lewis, you could see him bumping around and sliding all the time through the corners. Russell looked way more hooked up this weekend. Lewis looked like he was really, really struggling with the rear, which was something that apparently was fixed. But that's the thing with Mercedes. The past 3 years, and you know what? I'll give credit to Shaq for for calling out my BS, I guess, last week, because I was saying everything looks finally lined up for Mercedes from the simulator to the track. They've sorted out one of their biggest problems again. And you know what? He called me out because I sounded like a broken record, and that was 100% valid. I was a broken record because it's the third time in a row it's taken me two races to completely lose faith in this team. Their high-speed performance, as I said earlier, was completely shocking. They had, I think they were on par with a couple of the lower midfield teams through the high-speed sector, but like legitimately, the only team worse than Mercedes was Haas. One team was worse than Mercedes, and it was Haas. On the straight-line speed, they were actually decent. Low speed, they're one of the best on the grid. So there are certain things that obviously the car does well because they're not last. They have great drivers too that are always going to get the maximum out of the car. And that is, of course, a huge reason why they finished second last year and will probably still continue to do well this year despite their car issues. But man, oh man, to hear that the simulator says their high-speed performance is good, and then they get to the track and it doesn't work out is so concerning. They have to sort that out. It's how are you going to develop when what's showing in the data is not translating to the track? There is something there that they do not understand. It's been 3 years, so it's not going to be an easy thing to find. So I'm sorry, Mercedes fans out there. I'm extremely worried about this year and next year. I know if you're a Lewis Hamilton fan and you're going to be moving on from this team, then maybe you're not so concerned about the future. However, if you're just Mercedes through and through, maybe you're a huge George Russell fan, it's not looking good. I don't have any faith in this team, even beyond 2025. They might make a great engine in 2026, but if they can't work off of their simulator tools, then they're just not going to be able to develop and design cars like the other top teams are. It's just not going to happen. So yeah, they should put all of their chips into sorting out that issue, in my opinion, because that has to be one of the biggest and most important things to have right. It's honestly quite shocking that they're still dealing with this issue. And then of course, bouncing comes back, and it's not the same type of porpoising, but it's obviously not a great ride in that car. It just kind of seems like all the stuff they were talking about in Bahrain, which typically they're pretty pessimistic about their own performance. To see them so optimistic, it felt different, but then one race later and everything just seems to have gone to shit. So I don't know. I'm completely frustrated with Mercedes at the moment. And yeah, I think we're not going to see a step from them until the European tracks. So yeah, I expect Australia to go bad. I expect China and Japan not to go well. And I expect Miami to be a struggle. All of those tracks, it's going to be a difficult one for Mercedes. Perhaps by Imola, they can sort out something. That's the hope. And with low speed performance, maybe Monaco goes well. That's also a possibility. Anyway, enough spouting out about my team. We'll get to Aston Martin. And I always kind of feel bad when I talk about Aston because I don't have that much to say usually. Because the story always kind of seems to be the same. Alonso is brilliant. I actually thought he had a shot at pole. He was so good through the first sector. Stroll made Q3 and then crashed. Was also 0.5 off in qualifying. So kind of a very Stroll-esque performance. The joke around the paddock right now, from what I've heard from the race podcast, to give them the credit, is that the bottom five teams, because there's such a separation, are basically trying to beat Lance Stroll for the 10th. Position to get 1 point. And that is pretty much what has happened so far in these first two races. Stroll gets the P10 in the first race, barely beats out Joe. And then in the second race, he crashes and we get 1 point from one of the bottom five teams. So yeah, pretty shocking stuff there from Stroll. I would say Aston Martin is definitely the worst of the top five teams, but nowhere near those bottom five. As I said, a pretty big separation there. But my only question is with Aston Martin is, it seemed last year that qualifying, they weren't great. But in the race, they were really good on their tires. They kind of had some Red Bull characteristics. At least that's how it felt at the beginning of last year. And now it kind of seems like this weird trend is forming after two races that they can actually qualify right up at the sharp end, especially with Alonso. But then in the race, they're just not there. And that is strange because Alonso's strength is definitely race day. I wouldn't say he's a great qualifier ever in his career. And then especially at 42 years of age, it does seem like with age, qualifying pace is typically what seems to go the most. However, race pace continues just because you have all the experience and you're a bit more cunning out on the track, I would say. But yeah, a weird trend could be forming here if this team is going to continue to qualify well, but then not really compete in the race. But it was impressive for Alonso to be able to hold off George Russell the entire race. But yeah, I guess that's what happens when Russell cannot follow at all through the first sector, and then he's not within DRS range for the rest of the lap. So that's what happens when you have a trash car in one whole part of the track, I guess, when you're Mercedes. Anyway, that's all on Aston Martin. And then I quickly wanted to just quick fire some points about the bottom five. You have to talk about Haas because they were complete savages this weekend. And by that, I mean that their pace wasn't actually that great. It was maybe slightly better than the rest. I don't even know if that's really fair to say. They all seemed pretty even, the bottom five pack. But what they did with Hülkenberg and Magnussen was hilarious. So they split the strategies on the early safety car when Stroll crashed. Hülkenberg stayed out. Kevin Magnussen came in. Magnussen was ahead of the pack, or I think he had to make one move. I guess he did. Anyway, Magnussen, he got a penalty for squeezing out Alex Albon. He took the position there, 10-second penalty, and then he overtook Tsunoda off the track, got another 10-second penalty, and that, I guess, is what got him at the front of this huge queue of DRS trains. Hülkenberg stayed out, so he was ahead, and they're like, well, Magnussen's race is ruined, 20 seconds, there's no way he overcomes that. So basically, they got Magnussen to back up the pack, so much so that Hülkenberg was able to build a 20-second buffer so he could come into the pits and stay ahead of the queue and then just drive off into the distance on the fresh tires. And Magnussen pulled it off. The moves on Tsunoda, and especially the one with Albon, not great stuff. And the fact that he was like third for driver of the day voting is a bit crazy. But that also is a reflection of how well he defended after that. I mean, there was the one on Tsunoda that was brilliant. He basically had lost the position and just dove down the outside, made it stick through the corner. That was extremely impressive, and they didn't touch. I think Tsunoda was maybe a little bit too conservative, but still, Magnussen had to do it, and then he kind of brushed him out on the exit of turn two. Brilliant stuff, and Tsunoda, I think, actually lost an extra position, but that was some spectacular defending from Magnussen, and he earned the team the point at the end of the day, even though it was, you know, earned by Magnussen. The argument, I think, also could be, or maybe not the argument, but Magnussen probably could have got that point himself had he not got the penalty. So Haas is actually looking really good. They're not falling like stones throughout the race. So they're a legitimate contender for the back end of the points, because that's really all those bottom five teams can go for. But they look better than RB. They look better than Alpine. And I would say Williams, I think they're better than they've been. They've had some misfortune these first two races. Alpine's obviously still in the mud. But yeah, Williams, I think, with Albon, is definitely going to snipe at the back end of the point sometimes. RB, I don't really know what's going on there. They do seem like they're a little quicker than the likes of Alpine and Williams, but they're not really executing, I guess, especially with Ricciardo. He is definitely getting beat by Tsunoda right now. He was definitely unlucky. The broadcast didn't show that he had like a 41-second pit stop. So if you were halfway through the race and wondering, oh wow, Ricciardo's like way, way back from the pack. He caught up because Magnussen was holding them back. But at one point he was really far behind and had to catch up. That was because of a slow pit stop, as I said. But yeah, still, he's not looking great. He spun at the end of the race as well. So yeah, bad weekend from him. Tsunoda is looking the quicker driver right now. And then I guess the last team that I haven't mentioned is Stake. And I think their performance is actually okay for where the car is at. Like they're not behind that pack by any means. And in fact, I would probably argue that they are slightly quicker than Alpine and probably Williams as well. But their drivers, man, they're just, the drivers are not good. Bottas really struggled. I think Zhou, or I don't remember if it was Zhou or Bottas, but there was another really slow pit stop. They got to sort that out too. So yeah, operationally and just driver performance wise, this team is a little bit behind. However, the overall performance of the car, I think, is probably better than most people realize it is as well. Anyway, let's get to the results of the Grand Prix. Max Verstappen cruised to victory. It's his second 9-race winning streak in his career. He's the first driver to ever have two of those. But he was followed closer this time by his Red Bull teammate Sergio Perez. P3 was again a Ferrari, but this time it was Charles Leclerc. P4, Oscar Piastri. A great result, but it didn't really feel like that great of a drive, if I'm honest, just because he was tucked up behind Lewis Hamilton so much. And when he finally got past Lewis, because Lewis came into the pits, he was just so far behind Leclerc, and he had no race really ahead of him or behind him, because Alonso and Russell, who are next, Alonso P5, Russell P6, they just weren't really a part of Piastri's race either. As I said, I think Alonso's P5 drive was pretty solid. George Russell did not impress in P6, but the P7 driver certainly did impress. Ollie Bearman, of course, he's got more points in F1 than he does in F2 right now, which is kind of crazy. Prema, his F2 team, really struggled in Bahrain. And then, of course, he comes alive in Jeddah, and then they take him out of the car and stick him in the Ferrari. So I'm sure he was fine moving to Ferrari, but yeah, he probably would have preferred if it was the other way around and he got out of that tractor he had to drive in Bahrain. But anyway, I digress. Lando ended up P8 after losing out because of that early safety car. Same story for Lewis. They kept both those drivers out so they didn't have to double stack. They were second on the road behind their teammates at the time, so unfortunately, they just got the short end of the stick there. Neither one had a great performance or a bad performance, really. I think they were both pretty mid. Lewis did have some great defending on Piastri, but at the end of the day, I don't think it actually hurt or helped his race. Anyway, then it was a fantastic, albeit controversial, P10 for Nico Hülkenberg for the reasons I already mentioned with what Kevin Magnussen did. In fact, I think RB was extremely unimpressed by their antics, just because I don't think this was what Haas intentionally did. But in theory, if a driver was already completely out of the race, because he already had a 10-second penalty at this point, they could just cut a corner, keep the position from Tsunoda, and then back him up so his teammate could score a point. That didn't look intentional in what happened and what Haas was aiming to do, but that could happen in the future, so RB not happy about it at all. But yeah, Haas gets on the board early. They always seem to do that, which is another strange kind of trait about this team. But anyway, Haas is in sixth. So let's get into the standings. Drivers first, though. Verstappen, P1, of course, 51 points, almost the max, just missing that one fastest lap from Saudi Arabia. Perez, back-to-back P2, so he's on 36 points. And then Leclerc is P3 with 28. He grabbed the fastest lap. George Russell, P4 right now, 10 points behind Leclerc already, 18 points there. And then it's a little tight pack here. Piastri on 16. With a great result in Saudi. And then Sainz on 15, still just as one podium. So he could be way further ahead, but unfortunately he had appendicitis. Still ahead of Alonso and Norris. They are tied on 12 points. And then further back, it's Lewis Hamilton, who's really struggled to open the year. He is only 2 points ahead of Ollie Bearman, who is kind of hilariously in that top 10 right now, because behind Bearman, it's just a tie. Nico Hülkenberg and Lance Stroll are 11th and 10th. Then looking at the constructors, it's Red Bull on 87 points. Of course, they are P1 with a 1-2 finish in both races to open the season. So they've already opened a decent gap to Ferrari, who were in second, 49 points. They have a healthy lead on both McLaren and Mercedes, though. McLaren P3, 2 points ahead of Mercedes in P4. Aston Martin a little further back there in fifth with 13. And then Haas, the only other team to score 1 point, there in P6. And then, of course, Williams Stake, RB Alpine, still all pointless at this point of the season. Points. All right, let's get into the prize, demise, and surprise. My camera seems to be dying shortly. So the prize, Ollie Bearman, it's a no-doubter. I think he just secured a seat for next year. So he is easily the biggest winner of the weekend. I didn't say earlier in my race review how fantastic his one move on Yuki Tsunoda was. It was a bit of a dummy where he kind of jinked to the outside and realized Tsunoda was leaving way too much of the inside. So then he switched back, or it's not a switchback. I'm kind of describing this poorly, but then he kind of jinked back to the left, dove down the inside instead. So faked the outside, went down the inside, brilliant stuff. And even afterwards in the interviews, he was kind of glowing a little bit about that move. He actually had the most overtakes of the entire race as well, probably because he qualified out of position in a Ferrari, but still great job from him. Aggressive on lap one. He was fantastic. Didn't put a foot wrong. Now, the demise is Mercedes. I already kind of ranted about them as well. It's just not looking good from here on out. Lewis Hamilton himself says he anticipates challenges for the rest of, or not the rest, but for the few races ahead. George Russell was confused as to why the car sometimes feels great, and then when it matters most, it's just not coming together. Probably because there's something wrong with the data. I can't stress that enough. It has to be so important because I don't know how, as an engineer, not that I have a ton of engineering experience, I don't know how you could work as an engineer when the data you're looking at is just not accurate to reality. That's your whole foundation, your base point, right? So yeah, they have to fix that. The surprise, I struggled to come up with one. I really wanted to find a good surprise about this race. I could not think of one. So I'll just say how dominant Red Bull was. It honestly was a surprise to me. I know that's crazy to say after what we've been subjected to the last 2.5 years or whatever it's been. But I really thought Ferrari would be stronger here. They weren't quite there. So yeah, for Leclerc to finish 20 seconds behind Max was a surprise to me, actually. So yeah, now before I wrap up, I don't think it would be kind of crazy for me not to mention all this Red Bull drama with Christian Horner that's still going on each day passing, especially around race weekends when the paddock's a little busier. There's a new development in this story. And so when I record a podcast only once a week, there's lots to go over still. So yeah, it's been confirmed that the employee who made the allegations against Christian Horner has been suspended, and this has created another shockwave around the paddock, adding to already a crazy amount of speculation about this incident. My thoughts are that either this is some really shady shit going on by Red Bull, or the woman actually did lie. The hard part is it's impossible to know. If there was any evidence that the woman had of any sort of sexual harassment or exploitation from Christian Horner, then getting her suspended is, of course, absolutely egregious. And I feel like a lot of people online immediately take the side of the woman, which I understand. But there is an unfortunate reality of people doing that for attention as well. So it's hard to say, especially when we have no details. Ultimately, Red Bull ruled that Christian Horner didn't do anything wrong. So in theory, if they believe that she was lying, then yeah, it's not someone that you would want employed at the company. But that's a big if, right? It's a really big if. If Red Bull knows for a fact that she was lying and fabricating this story, then yeah, that's pretty serious. And I understand suspending her or letting her go. But I don't believe that that's the case. Just my personal takeaway is that I don't think Red Bull knows for certain that Christian Horner did nothing wrong. He may not have. I'm not saying Christian Horner is definitely guilty of something. He might be completely innocent in all of this, but I don't think they know for sure that this girl was lying, made it all up, and Christian Horner has done nothing wrong. So to suspend her when you don't know that for sure, that's the problem I think a lot of people have, and that frankly I sort of have with the whole situation. A bit of a shocking move from Red Bull there, especially PR related. I know to bring up PR in this circumstance is a little bit insensitive, maybe. I don't know. I think that's fair, right? To say that this was also just a bad move for their PR, but I guess this whole company's a PR nightmare right now, to be fair. So since that debacle though, more has come out as of course it has, right? There's also been rumblings about Max Verstappen moving away from Red Bull after the comments that Max's dad Jos made last week. I talked about this with Shaq. He kind of shot it down, said Max is obviously going to stay in the fastest car for the time being. And I would be shocked to see him move as well. But you know, a lot of this speculation is tied to what some are describing as a bit of a civil war within the larger Red Bull company. It's owned 51% by a Thai group, 49% by an Austrian group. Helmut Marko is a senior advisor for Red Bull, the company. He doesn't actually work for Red Bull Racing. He is tied to, or aligned, I should say, with the Austrian side of Red Bull. And Verstappen's allegiance is to Marko. So they're kind of all on that side of Red Bull. But the Thai group, I should say, is really backing Christian Horner. They have been defending him from the start. And apparently the Austrian side, not so keen to keep Christian Horner on. I should say, though, full credit to the journalists who are actually doing this work in the paddock and around the paddock. The Race, Autosport, Telegraph, Amos, among others. I'm talking about information that these brilliant, reliable sources have uncovered through their hard work. So full credit to them. I'm not trying to copy what they're saying. I'm simply just trying to give you guys the facts so I can give my thoughts on it. Yeah, this is very interesting, though, that there's this split within Red Bull, because Christian Horner and Red Bull, the company, have talked a big game about unity within the company, and I do believe that is happening trackside, and that's evidenced by their performance. I mean, they're dominating the sport. The car that they have is incredible, and they make no mistakes while they're trackside. And I feel like all those people, the mechanics, and everyone that works for the team, are extremely passionate about racing, and they're not going to let this bother them. However, up above them, there's definitely something going on, and it just can't be the case that they're unified there. I mean, Marko recently to the media said that he could be suspended. Why would he say that if there was unity right now, right? There's clearly a power struggle going on. There's speculation that Helmut Marko was behind the leak or the leak to the media, full of photos, videos, and screenshots of text messages with Christian Horner and the woman. All, of course, a very bad look for Horner. The legitimacy of those leaks are still undetermined, I guess. So it's come out that Marko will not be suspended. So now there's fresh speculation that Christian Horner will be let go before the Australian Grand Prix, and that the Thai side has finally agreed to it. And they'll never say it, but I think this is what the Austrian side, including, you know, what Marko and what the Verstappens want. I do think this is their wish, is to see Christian Horner go. But another layer to this is, I think this is also exactly what Ford wants. And that's a big deal to Red Bull. I think Ford doesn't want anything to do with this drama. They want to just cut Christian Horner loose, get rid of all this bad PR, and just move on so that they're ready to partner with Red Bull in 2026 and not have to worry about these issues, which is completely fair. So that's a whole nother thing to consider, and maybe what's swaying the Thai decision if they are going to let Christian Horner go. I mean, based off of everything that's been said, it kind of does seem like that should be the move forward, because you do not want to lose Max Verstappen as much as Christian Horner says it might be okay. Anyway, I'm getting a little bit ahead of myself. Jos was not in Saudi this week, so he was not able to make any new comments or explain his comments from previously. But Max was asked about the potential infighting within the team, and to sum up what he had said pretty much all weekend was that he cannot continue without Marko. That is some pretty strong backing behind a team member that could have been suspended, of course wasn't. But Marko also said that his dad is his own man, but he's not wrong and he's not an idiot. He did say that, so obviously he somewhat believes what his dad said, but at the end of the day, Max's main focus is on racing. And that is 100% true. There is no way that Max, I shouldn't say really cares, but his number one priority is always going to be racing. He is a racer through and through. So he is going to be able to switch that off no problem, and that's evidenced by the excellence he is displaying on track, of course. So, Max has not fully backed his team boss, though. And as I said, that support from or that support of Helmut Marko and then still not publicly backing his team boss is it's really easy to read through between the lines and see that. So it's all pretty interesting. That's pretty much all I got, I guess. But to put a bow on it, I kind of said it earlier when I was getting ahead of myself. Christian Horner was asked post-race about this whole situation, and he said everything is good with the team, but no one person is bigger than the team. And I think that basically means that Horner says, okay, Max, you know what? You want to leave Red Bull? Go right ahead. Go to Mercedes, to that team that can't even figure out their simulator. Toto Wolff is saying all sorts of stuff to the media, saying that he's ready for Max Verstappen, would love to have him in the team, no doubt. So Christian Horner says, yeah, go ahead, Max. We'll keep winning without you, which is kind of crazy. They probably could do it right now with their car, but in 2026, I'm not so sure. So, yeah, more to come on this for sure. But that's going to be it. Before I wrap up, though, a really exciting announcement or news, I guess, in my life. For all you guys listening to the podcast, I really appreciate these 89 episodes we've had. But I will be working at Sportsnet. If you're not Canadian, that is one of... There's basically two major sports networks in Canada, Sportsnet and TSN. Sportsnet is the one that I actually grew up watching. So to work for them is an absolute dream. It's going to take up a lot of my time commuting 2 hours each way to this job, at least for now. So I'm going to be a hell of a lot busier, and it's going to make keeping this podcast going very challenging. However, I have plans to completely keep doing what I'm doing. However, I'm not sure how the work-life balance is going to go yet. So the future of the podcast is, I would say, nothing's changed for now. However, more announcements might come later. I might have to change what day I do things. I'm not sure. So we'll see. Maybe I have to change the format and make it shorter just so I have less editing to do. I don't know. But yeah, this is a huge change in my life, and I would be surprised if it didn't have any impact on the podcast. So yeah, super excited for this opportunity. But yeah, lots to figure out with what I'm doing with this podcast. Anyway, that's going to do it for episode 89 of Brake Bias. I'm your host, Brad Kramer, and I will be back next week to preview the Australian Grand Prix. Goodbye.